Welcome to In My Own Words. I am wearing buttons for Pete the Planner. Nice. You've been here 2 seconds already classing up the place. Let's start the show. All right, welcome back to In My Own Words. I am your host, Tony R. Sanders. Got a special guest with us today, Peter Dunn, also known as Pete the Planner. Pete, there are so many ways that I could introduce you.
Sure.
But there are a couple ways I want to introduce you. I want to introduce you by talking about the things that we have in common.
Okay, I love it.
We went to the same high school.
Different years.
Definitely different years.
But you can feel the spirit.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, both went to the same high school. We both do stand-up comedy.
You're probably good at it. I do it just for my own.
I've heard you be funny. You're pretty funny.
Well, I think it's because you want me to be on the show today, and so you're just complimenting me. I do feel like you said you're Tony R. Sanders.
Yes.
I feel like I should use my middle initial just so we have something else in common.
That would be great.
I'm Peter N. Dunn.
Peter N.
Dunn.
N
as in Nancy. It's Nicholas, but as in Nancy.
Peter Nancy Dunn would be an amazing name.
You know, there's that Ted Nancy guy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Sorry,
hijacked the show.
No, you're good. We both do stand-up, and we both have trophies with the name Peter Dunn on it.
How is that possible?
Well, let me show you. I received this trophy, most likely to give Peter Dunn a run for his money.
I love it. Did you really receive this?
I did. I received this.
Yeah.
I received this. So
hilarious.
You did an event, and the next year, we were planning the event, and they wanted to do awards for everyone who helped out, and they were like, man, you know what? Tony could probably host these types of events.
I agree, actually.
Not this one, because we got Pete, so get out of here, Tony. But in the future, Tony could do this event, and so they gave me this trophy. That was my claim to fame for that year. I'm most likely to give Peter Dunn a run for his money.
You know what's really funny about this is... So I do events, and sometimes I get to meet people, like how you and I met, and maybe the person's job isn't to be on stage, but you start talking, I mean, I've done this long enough, like, I can feel who should be.
Right.
And this is before I knew you did stand-up.
Okay.
I 100% agree. And in fact, sometimes when I didn't do an event for them, in my mind, I was like, well, I assumed you were either doing it or you should be doing it.
I never did.
You should.
But I want to. I definitely want to.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. What I like about you, what I've always liked about you, is you're very present. You're not thinking about what you want to say.
Yeah.
You're just in the moment. And I feel like a lot of people who are funny or have camera presence or can get on a mic, entertaining is being present. Entertaining is not like your setup and punchline. It's about if you're in the moment and you hear an opportunity, you go for it. And so that's why you would be amazing on stage, is because you listen.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I got you to do the show and compliment me to start the show. That's amazing.
No. Well, this is...
How much is that going to cost me?
They spent a lot of money on this.
Yeah, they did. That's fancy.
Let's listen to this.
Be careful with it. That's incredible.
Yeah. That's a dollar drop.
That's
right
incredible.
There, baby.
So Pete the Planner is the owner and CEO of Your Money Line, the Pete the Planner brand. You probably seen him, I don't know, everywhere. I was looking up clips.
Yeah.
I've seen you on Fox and MSNBC and everywhere. Like, you've been everywhere, which is a really cool thing to be.
It's been a long journey, man.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, at one point I was just a financial advisor, and then I started doing some media stuff because I wrote a crappy book. And then I thought I wanted to, like, be known as this, like, media money figure, and I kind of was for a while. My goals have shifted.
Okay.
But along the line, I mean, I've done a lot of crazy stuff. I mean, I did a series for Good Morning America, and they were very important to me at the time.
Yeah.
I respect where it took me. And I say this respectfully to all those experiences in my past self. I don't care about any of it anymore. Which is interesting, right? Because as we grow, you stop caring about what you thought was so important.
Absolutely.
And that's where I'm at.
I think it's important to even be able to acknowledge those things.
Yeah.
They're like, I did that. That was fun. But I don't care about that anymore. And not, hang on to what was, the things you're doing now, which we'll talk about today, you're creating great moments now, and you're not hanging on to the things that you did yesteryear. So I think that's important for growth.
I think so. It also helps us help people with money, because if we define someone by their past decisions, then it's really hard to help them for what they're trying to do.
You know. So there's a lot to talk about when it comes to money, but I want to ask you from a business standpoint, from an entrepreneurial standpoint, you've been in business for over 18 years now, is that correct?
Yeah.
How do you even go about building a business such as Your Money Line or Peter Planner? First, let's talk about what Your Money Line is.
Sure.
And, you know, talk us through that process of how you built that.
Your Money Line is an employee benefit that employers offer to their organization. And the essence is this, that we're a group of professional financial problem solvers. So everyone's got questions and problems and challenges in their financial life. And companies bring us in and turn us loose on their employees. And so their employees have a question, they call us or email or text with us. And we are mercenaries. We just solve problems. We don't sell anything.
Yeah.
We don't manage people's investments. We fix the gnarliest, dumpster fire-est problems. The worse, the better.
Yeah.
And we love it because the financial services industry, Tony, is currently set up to help people with money. Right. We're in the financial services industry, but our goal is to help people whether they have money or not and put the smartest people on those problems. And so that's what we do. We do it for hundreds of thousands of people. We've got a big team. I love it. I used to get to do it personally. I mean, the whole Pete the Planner thing was I was a practitioner. I did these things.
Right.
But now, I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm there to get problems out of my people's way so they can serve people.
So is that how the story started? Did you start doing your own financial planning for people? And then, of course, you know, having that entrepreneurial mind, you have to find a way for this to scale. It doesn't, Pete only has so many hours in the day to talk to people about their money problems. And so, you know, you start to bring on one more person and two more people and you get up to where you are now. Is that kind of the trajectory?
Well, I think like a lot of things, it ended up being like this happy accident. It was about 2005.
Okay.
I was sitting in the driveway just after an appointment with two attorneys. I was going to, they were a new client and I was going to talk to them about their money. This was Central Indiana and they were making at the time household income of about $385,000, right?
Okay.
Which makes you basically a Rockefeller.
Yeah, that's amazing, amazing income, especially in Indiana.
But they were a mess, man. They were a mess. And I go back to the driveway, and I just, from knowing what I knew about financial planning, I either had to find another couple, another group of people to help, because I couldn't make any money on them, which is a sort of sad reality of financial planning.
Okay.
And then it hit me, I was like, well, why don't I try to fix them? I'll make nothing.
Right.
But I bet there's a lot of people like them. So I decided to create a way to fix people's BS, right?
Okay.
And then they started passing me around to their friends. And their friends started passing me around to others. Then I became known as this fixer of really complex, embarrassing financial problems.
Yeah.
And this was at the same time that I was really redefining myself professionally. See, on the weekends, I was a comedian. During the week, I was just this guy trying to help you with your money, and I never slammed the two together.
Yes. How did you do that? That's so just a selfish moment in the interview.
Yeah.
That's something I'm struggling with, right?
Well, I'm excited to give you some shortcuts, hopefully. So,
okay.
I mean, think about the people you like the most in your life, right? Think about the people that you look up to, and you're like, man, I love that person.
Yeah.
You love them because they're the same all the time. You don't like people who are one way at church, another way at the club, I've never been to a club, and another way with their marriage.
Right.
You love people who are the same all the time. And what I found was at work, I was trying to be this serious person. I'm not a serious person.
Yeah.
What I love to do is to make horrible things interesting. That's what I love. That's what comedy
is. That's what comedy is, absolutely.
Right? And so around 2004, I was in Indianapolis. I was awarded is a little rough, but sort of a comedian of the year type title by Nouveau.
Okay.
And I was like, it sucked to me. Because here I was not trying at comedy except on Friday and Saturday nights.
Yeah.
And I put everything into my career. And I just, things were going fine, but I didn't get that sort of recognition. So I quit comedy, stone cold.
Wow.
After that came out. And I was like, all right, well, let's just slam the two together. Because
you won Comedian of the Year, and then immediately after quit comedy.
Absolutely. It felt like a baller move at the time. In retrospect, I'm like, it was kind of a mic drop. But
walk off? Yes.
But it was done. Why feel good on Friday and Saturday and then grind during the week and not get those moments of gratification? And so I took a risk, and I had a friend who was into marketing. So this is 2005, man. So she came to me and she's like, you need a weblog. I was like, a weblog? She's like, people call it a blog.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. So I started writing. I'm not a writer. Wasn't a writer. I am now.
Yeah.
Wasn't a writer. Wrote a crappy blog post. No one read it.
Okay.
Wrote another one. No one read it. So I wrote the first, at the end of the first week, I wrote 5 blog posts.
Okay.
I think I had like 9 hits on the site. And it was Saturday morning. And I was like, well, I'm done here. I think this is all I have to say. But I stayed at it. And yeah. By the end of 2005, I was working on a book, which is, I'm looking for if it's around here. It's a piece of crap, everybody.
Is it the Retire in Your 60s book?
No, that's an amazing book.
To okay. Me. I have that book.
In your 60s?
I think it is. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know why I have that
You're
book.
You're not in your 60s.
In the last episode, it was in the background.
Oh.
It just happened to be there.
Product placement.
Yeah.
So I started writing. I wrote a book, and then it got on a local newscast to talk about this crappy book. And then that's where it all happened, man.
Wow.
I saw the light go on. I had a mic on my jacket, and it was like, wait, I'm performing. This is anything I've ever wanted.
Yeah.
Nailed it. They're like, you got to come back every week. So I come back every week. Then that turned into all sorts of stuff. Then it turned into national stuff. And then I was flying to New York once a week for Fox News, which was a different time, y'all. and then I started a radio show. And then I started writing a newspaper column, and it was... I don't know, man. I wasn't trying to be anything. I was trying to appeal to people the way comedians appeal to people. Comedians are great because they're conversational.
Absolutely.
And I think if you're trying to combine the two, which is sort of a weird thing to say, but
yeah,
you have to understand why you're appealing on stage and what it is that makes people vibe with you. And it's the fact that you're just distilling down information to its essence.
Yeah.
You know, when people go, I never thought of it that way. Oh.
Yeah.
You've just distilled it down to the essence.
Absolutely.
And that is... as your professional and entrepreneur, that's what it's about. It's about communicating. It's about relationships. And if I'm concerned with appearing smart so that you have to value me, that's a problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have to use my intelligence to make it easier for you so you value me.
Absolutely.
Big difference.
People don't understand that about communication. Like when I communicate with someone, it's not about me, it's about them.
Right.
I want to make sure that they get what they need from me and not me say what I need to say or show off that I have the dictionary.com app on my phone and I get the word of the day every day. Splendiferous is a wonderful word, but if I use it in conversation, you don't know what it means. It doesn't matter, right?
No, so, I don't even know what it. I got to Google it.
I don't really know what it means either, but it popped up. Splendiferous sounds amazing, though.
I think it is. I've had so many steps along the way where I look at it and I'm like, oh, man, what terrible mistakes I was making. At one point in time, I was hiring people so they could make my job easier, right? I was like, oh, I need an assistant. I need this person. They can make my job easier. Then it occurred to me, deep into this whole thing, I was like, wait a second. I need to hire people and then make their job easier. Like, my job as CEO of this organization is to remove garbage from people's lives. So, because I hired trusted, intelligent people, their job is not to make my life better.
Right.
My job is to make their life better. We hired my executive assistant in the last couple months and said to her, look, your job is not to make me feel important. Your job is to help me make other people feel important.
Yeah.
And I think it's that communication is about the other person.
Yeah.
And these are, you know, it took a while, man.
This is incredible. I'm learning a lot.
Good.
I appreciate you sharing that information with me. So that first couple that you work with, they were making $385,000 a year. How different are the problems that you guys solve today than the ones that they had? Because I heard you say they were embarrassing and like really like things that maybe people, you don't share them at the dinner party.
Well, it's how I describe that. The problems are all the same.
Okay.
There's some things are exasperated by Amazon.com has caused more problems than people realize, stuff like that. Whew. But I'll say this, it's how we talk about it. I just described a situation in which when I looked at it, when I was, I can do math now. I was 27.
Okay.
Okay. I'm 42 now.
Okay.
Right? So I look at the situation and I describe it as a dumpster fire. I describe it as horrible and terrible.
Right.
Now, if I look at a situation like that, I would never describe it that way. I would describe it as someone who's struggling.
Yeah.
It's the grace we extend to people that allow us to help them. Like if I look at it, you know, we work with CEOs and athletes and all those sorts of things, and people love to make fun of professional athletes and their money.
Yeah.
Well, along the way, we stopped doing that because we realized it's like, okay, well, let's look at their situation.
Right.
I'm not going to tell you any names. We're not naming names.
All right.
No names.
I won't ask.
But I'm going to tell you a story about a professional athlete.
Mark Cuban.
No, yeah, okay, that's it. Oh, well, he's an athlete. Here's the deal. This person was raised by a single mother.
Okay.
Had four siblings, right? His mom worked three, four jobs to be able to bring him up. Kid went to high school, figured out he's a good athlete. So his chance, he saw this chance to help his family by focusing on athletics. Didn't focus on academics at all, which that's the first step that people always make fun of athletes is how stupid they are.
Yeah.
Gets into college, barely, proves his worth, doesn't go to class. He goes to earn a living, which is to play football. Makes it in the NFL. Starts making, you know, 50 grand a week, right?
Right.
Which is league minimum at the time, right? 50 grand a week. And the reality was, based on the situation he grew up in, of course his decisions are different than the situation I grew up in.
Absolutely.
Yet we make fun of his journey when it's like, man, I was born on third base.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And so this idea that we make fun of people because they struggle, whether it's with money or anything,
yeah,
it sucks. And I think just maturing through this and understanding that we all struggle with something. I mean, I'm pudgy as hell. I mean, I struggle with food decisions.
Yeah, me too. This is my winter body though.
Like, yeah,
this doesn't.
Yeah,
around May, I won't have slimmed this
out
anymore.
Absolutely, swimsuit season.
Yeah, absolutely. My beach body will be in production.
See, as a ginger, my excuse is that the sun will kill me.
Gotcha.
Right, I'd be like, hey guys, I want to take off this shirt. I really care about things like melanoma and those sorts of things. And the reality is, I'm fat. I don't want to take off my shirt.
Thinking about that athlete story. Is it more so? A lot of people think that they could, for lack of a better phrase, out earn their stupidity with money.
Yeah.
Like, I've been in a commission based job for a while, and like, I was in that boat. Like, oh, I don't need to budget. I need to earn more. And if I can earn more, then I could do more and I could save more and, you know, do all these other things that I want to do. What do you say to those people that, you know, you have the athlete making 50 grand a week, you have this couple making 385K, is increasing your income, you know, the holy grail, the solution to all of our problems?
I don't think so. I think if you make below living wage, which is a real thing, it's not that people are going to go to different websites that I mentioned on here, but if you want to, there's this cool calculator. It's called livingwage.mit.edu,
okay.
Massachusetts Institute of Technology.
Okay.
Livingwage.mit.edu. You can enter the county in which you live in this country.
Okay.
You can enter how many adults live in your household and how many kids live in your household, and then how many of those adults work. It will tell you how much you have to make an hour in order to survive.
Really?
Yeah. So, to your question, if you make above that number, to me, your income does not matter. If you make below that number, income is the problem.
Gotcha.
Right? So, there are people, you know, consuming this right now that will say, you know what? The solution is to make more money. But I'll tell you, for most people, it's not.
Yeah.
It's to make harder decisions around your money.
Harder decisions around your money. What happens to people when they get a lump sum of money, or even just their paycheck, right? I've seen you do talk about this before. And I've experienced it myself. I've seen it in others. There's a different energy around money on Friday,
hell yes,
or Saturday or Sunday when someone just got paid, as opposed to the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday before the paycheck. That energy is completely different. What happens? Is it something psychological? Is it something, you know, emotional? What happens with money, you know, around those times?
Survival instinct. It's a scarcity thing. Again, we make better decisions the day before payday than we do on the day we get paid because we're abundant in that moment. You know, look, I know you operate in this world of trying to understand what abundance means and looking at the, you know, your cup runneth over. I mean, I get it's a feeling. It's a vibe. However, abundance is not all that it's cracked up to be if you don't understand scarcity. So, I mean, I think you've heard my toilet paper example before. If you have not.
I do. I have. I love the toilet paper.
Because it resonates with people.
It does.
If you're in the restroom and there's a full roll of TP, you'll use a lot of TP dealing with what you're dealing with. But if you look over and you see cardboard, you will use less TP and still get out of the jam. And the issue is that the number of resources shifted, so therefore you became more resourceful. We're more resourceful the day before we get paid because we're broke.
Yeah.
And when we get paid, we're like, well, I don't have to be resourceful today. That's why it feels good, because you're like, oh, I don't have to be resourceful. It's like, you should.
So should we always live in a mindset of scarcity? Should we always live in a mindset like, you know, where we're seeing cardboard on the toilet paper?
No, but it's weird how this all sort of begins to tie together. And it gets complicated. I mean, the thing is, when people are like, it's easy, just spend less than you make. It's like, well, it's not that easy. this is why financial goals really matter.
Okay.
So let's say, can I just give you some financial goals? Or do you want to give your own?
No, like, let's
I can just
give you some.
Let's say you want 3 months' expenses in your savings account.
Okay.
Which I know we're going to talk more about savings, but let's say that, okay? And let's say you decide that's very important to you.
Okay.
And if I may weigh in as myself for a second, that's a good goal.
Yeah.
Okay? And then now let's say that you struggle with dining out.
Right. Okay?
If you struggle at the end of a month, you go, man, we dined out too much. If you're able to say, and because of that, we cannot accomplish this specific goal.
Wow.
That helps. Whereas if you were like, well, we want to have more money saved. Well, if you spend too much dining out, how do you quantify the idea that something's going wrong? We're not holding ourselves accountable. Goals are about accountability.
Right.
Right? And what they do is they take our natural problem areas and they allow us to take those problem areas and match it up with what we want. Because otherwise, we have to wait until it sucks so bad that we're forced to change.
Right.
You know?
That makes a lot of sense to me. And so we have to be more specific about our goals, right? Having 3 months worth of savings in an account is different than saying, we need to save money.
Well, I mean, even think about your stand-up career, man. I don't know if you're doing open mics, you're hosting or whatever you're doing, but even saying to yourself, all right, man, I got to get on stage 13 times this quarter or whatever, I'm making it up. But you've got a time frame and you've got a quantifiable number. 13 times, you either did it or you didn't.
Right.
The idea that no one wants to fail. But the best way to accomplish things is to set up a failure scenario where at the end of a time frame, you either failed or you didn't.
Right.
And so I think, you talk to my wife about this. I mean, I'm not always the most fun person to be married to with this stuff because we're trying to do some home improvement right now.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, when do you want it done by? And she was like, well, you know, the fall. And I'm like, no, give me a date. She's like, don't Pete the Planner me. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. What are we going
to
do?
Shout out to Miss Pete the Planner, by the way.
Mrs. Planner. She's
Mrs.
called
Planner.
In the biz.
Excuse me.
I always bring her up on stuff like this because she hates it.
Does she?
She hates everything about it.
And I just took a second to shout her out.
The funny thing, and this sounds like I'm flexing, but we'll be out to dinner or something and someone might come up and it's a small town. And people are like, oh, Pete the Planner. And she hates it. And I love it. I don't love it because I love it. I love it because she hates it.
That's so funny. Does she, I don't want to say respect what you do, but like my wife doesn't think I'm funny. Like she'll come to a comedy show and watch me rip for 15 minutes and laugh and say, you know, I talk about our lives and our, you know, our relationship. And she's like, I heard that stuff before. I was there when it happened. I'm like, that doesn't mean it's not funny.
Yeah. So what you and I, of course, appreciate is delivery and the crafting of a joke. Which
absolutely.
And so that's what we're actually tickled by.
Right.
I will say this. My wife's the same way. We have this joke that she laughs at me once a year. And if I earn it early in the year, I'm just like stranded. And I got on this run in the fall. This is 2019 where I'm basically, she's paid up through like 2024.
Okay.
She doesn't owe me a laugh because I was funny.
The laugh bank is full.
Yeah, it's full. But I'll say there's another interesting business lesson here, though, too, which is as I was building my career and trying to do all these big things, I would always go back to her for validation. I always wanted her to reflect back the excitement I had, which is a giant mistake.
Yeah.
Why the hell should she care?
Right.
She's there supporting me anyway. Why does she have to? Why should I get mad if she's not as excited about something as I am? And I barked up that wrong tree for a long time until I was like, yeah, I'm causing this.
Yeah, if she was as excited about it as you were, she'd be doing it herself.
Yeah, and there's nothing. Yeah, and that was a big step. We've been married 20 years. Like,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, so it's like, you know, you learn. And you know, I just learned, it's like, well, I shouldn't expect her to be excited.
Yeah.
I got home last night from Des Moines, the business capital of the world. I don't know. I was in Iowa yesterday. Got home late. And I know when I sit down in my chair, because I now list my age as I have a chair, I don't say, well, here's what happened in the meeting. We move on.
Yeah.
It's like, who cares?
Yeah. I'm starting to list my age as PJ's and wine by 9.
Yes.
That sounds amazing.
We have this thing. If we don't pop a bottle by 8:30, we're not opening anything.
Pete the Planner popping bottles.
And I would like to say that we pay retail. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, the idea.
It's another level of drinking responsibly.
I always laugh that I've never been to a club. I literally have never been to like a nightclub thing.
Really?
I couldn't do it. Because, you know, some people watch The Office and they can't handle it because they cringe.
Yeah.
I can't watch idiots. And that's not to say that people are go to nightclubs are idiots.
Yeah.
It's to suggest that there are idiots there.
Yeah.
And whereas I don't judge people financially, in that scenario, I may break down and shake my head.
They're at least showing idiot-type behavior at a minimum. Maybe they don't act that way all the time. But they're at least displaying idiot-type behavior.
If you talk to my coworkers around here long enough, they will tell you that the one thing I dislike more than anything is fun. Which is not necessarily true, but like I'm not going to go out to a club to have fun. Like I'm going to sit and watch Netflix.
That sounds like fun to me.
Yeah.
I'd rather go to the club and people watch than actually be involved. But even that's another thing.
I don't know what I would... Here's the thing. There's going to be a song that comes on that I listen to in my car that I enjoy.
Yeah. Right?
We both went to Pike High School.
Absolutely.
I went in the mid-90s. I have a certain taste in old school hip-hop. But there might be a song that I'm currently listening to, and it would come on, and I would feel so nervous and anxious around, should I react to this music in the setting that I'm in, and will people be looking at me? And so that's why I don't go to
They're college. Definitely looking at you, Pete.
Oh, absolutely.
They're definitely looking at you.
No one's looking at me. They're like, who's the bald guy? Who let him in?
So we're talking about, you know, being specific with our goals when we want to do something. And that's very close to the B word for me.
Oh.
The budget word.
Oh, okay.
Well, yes, like, well. different B word. I put a poll out on Twitter asking my followers what were they most concerned about. It was savings, budgeting, retirement, and where are my W-2s. No one voted for where my W-2s, which is very surprising.
Yeah.
But also, very few people voted for budgeting. Most people, I'm sorry, for retirement. Most people were concerned with saving money. Like I think 67 or 70% were concerned with, you know, saving money. Can any of those things be possible without having a budget? Can you live your life and have financial success without a budget?
Yes, but here's how people are reacting to that question. I would like to be able to take off my shirt in public, but I don't want to work out, right? So they're saying, I want to, with my saving, they're saying, I would like to mow my grass with just boy shorts on. That's what they're saying. But what they're not saying is, man, I want to make sure I don't eat bread.
Right.
And I'm not on that sugar.
Yes.
Right? And that's what they don't want to do. And I get that because I'm the same way.
Yeah.
Like, but here's the thing. I don't budget, but I used to budget. But here's why I don't budget. It ties back into goals. Mrs. Planner and I have very well-defined goals. Retirement, our kids' college, and that's basically it.
Yeah. Like,
and so that is to say, we fully fund them to completion. We fund them so they'll be accomplished. We don't throw as much as we can at it, not to downplay that, but we put what we should. Therefore, whatever is left over, I will spend it. It doesn't matter. If we partially fund a goal and then spend like an idiot, then you are an idiot. If you fully fund a goal and spend like an idiot, it doesn't matter.
Is budgeting really, because I think people hear budgeting and they think restrictions. Like, oh, budgeting is saying I can't do this and I can't do that. And I can't do that. My understanding, and I'm not the financial expert at the table, but my understanding is budgeting is more so of saying spending money with intention, whether we put it towards savings or investments or McDonald's or Anthony's Chop House. I don't know. Wherever you put it, but you're doing it with intention, you're doing it with a plan, and you're not spending it just kind of on an impulse. Would that be a fair description for budgeting for people who don't like that B word?
Well, first, I think it's important that you disclose that you name dropped Anthony's Chop House for a sponsorship opportunity.
Absolutely.
Hit us up.
I will be there soon, actually.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Look at you. He's flexing.
Gift card.
Yeah, exactly. I feel you. That's totally true. I'm the same. I think a budget, again, it goes back to your goals. It holds you accountable to your goals.
Okay.
Right? That's the whole point. I would also say, if we want to keep the food and fitness metaphor going, right, this whole of a fitness and nutrition thing, most of us have turned over a label to read the nutritional information, and that guides that food decision.
Right.
A budget does the same. You know,
okay.
You know what sucks, right, man? I grew up going to Steak and Shake.
Yeah.
As you can tell. All the time, man. When I was in high school, we just could go to one all the time. I get a bacon and cheese double, large cheese fry, large chocolate malt. Mid-2000s, Steak and Shake decided to put their nutritional information online.
Yeah.
So they put it online. I was like, build your meals. I'm going to build my meal. So I built my meal, and I look at my nutritional information. I have not had that meal since then.
I bet.
That's a budget.
The awareness. It's just like when you have that moment when you want to do a budget. Me and my wife sit down, and we say, okay, here are all of our expenses. Here's all of our income. Where's the rest of that money going? You have that aha moment, like, we should be having that money, and it's floating around in space somewhere. It's probably in all those Amazon Prime boxes downstairs or somewhere. I don't know.
So I think the thing that becomes before that, and you probably do it in some form, but a lot of people don't, is what are we trying to do here?
Yeah.
And if the answer is make life easier now, that's the wrong answer.
Yeah.
Because that's where people get in trouble. Okay, so let's say you had a good month, which a lot of people said, right?
Yeah.
And so they go to Sizzler or whatever. Like, they're going somewhere like, you know what? We had a good month. Let's roll.
Right.
The better thing to do is to say, okay, well, based on our goals, we can make tomorrow easier by using the good month to deal with that. That's what's tough about this. Like, when you feel good about having more money, the right thing is to do is to create long-term stability, not to allow it to have you exhale now. And gotcha. That is so hard.
So how do we do it?
Practice.
Okay.
Accountability is a big thing. Like, people running their financial lives on their own, whether they have a significant other or not.
Yeah.
That's really hard, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I lie to myself. I can sell myself anything. Right? I can sell myself.
Same.
Anything. Same. And so it's like, I need someone to be like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. And those are valuable. I'm a good talker. Valuable people.
You do
people
this for a living,
yeah,
Pete.
Yeah, I'm a big deal.
So we have that. Our money problems, I guess, our money problems or wrestling with the budget or trying to figure out your financial goals, it sounds like they're mostly behavior-based, right? They're all of a behavior that maybe we could find show up in other areas of our life. Like, if we lack discipline to sit down and make financial goals or to stick to a budget once we make one or whatever the case, that's probably showing up in other areas. So when you do financial counseling with people, does it ever trickle outside of just talking about the numbers and the red and the black?
Absolutely, but it's almost the reverse of that. So if someone's really struggling, we'll try to find an area of their life in which they feel in control, right? So,
okay.
So, you know, I've always had this weird belief that everyone's the best in the world at something, and you just hope it's a positive thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm the best in the world at not doing, you know, right. It's not that. But so it's this idea of, like, what is someone proud about, and what do they have discipline around? Look, it could be faith. It could be the quality of relationships with their mother. Like, it can be, it's like, okay, well, what's working? What characteristics exist within that? And then how can you have that sort of begin to assimilate into your financial life? Which sounds really technical and weird, but
no, that sounds great.
It's a cathartic process, man.
Yeah.
There's something, not to say your financial life is bad, but there's something amazing going on in your life. Your grind on the brand you're trying to build, right? There's something you do around that makes so much sense. And if you said, all right, well, how does that translate to my financial life? Not like, how does it create money for my financial life?
Right.
But what behaviors can transition?
Well, what if I say I do this, I'm building the brand, to use that example, because I love it, and I don't love doing a budget.
You love stability.
That's true.
I mean, and it's like, people love to feel good financially. People love payday because it allows them to feel good, feel real good, to feel really, really good for that moment of time. So, dude, you don't want to be financially disciplined. You want long-term stability.
Right.
You want, if a gig goes away, a job changes, you want to be able to be like, honey, we plan for this.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
that's good.
When we, you know, get in a car accident, you get a flat tire, it sucks.
Yeah.
But the feeling to know that you can pay for it and it's not going to ruin your financial life, like, that doesn't take away the pain of a rear ending. I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't even know.
I can see you searching for it, though. That was good. You were getting close.
You know, what is it? Thursday, Wednesday, Tuesday?
I don't even know.
I believe it's Wednesday, which is always good to make media like this evergreen by giving a day.
Right.
I'm a pro. But I'm out of words, and it's midweek, which means it's been a hard week.
Yes, it's been a crazy week. So I'm hearing all of this stuff, and when I look at, like, your website, when I go to PeteThePlanner.com and I read your stuff, listen to your stuff, you have this bold proclamation of never worrying about money again. When you say that, is that what you mean about like having that plan and, you know, kind of going through that process of, you know, maybe you don't love money right now because it's kicking your butt, but let's take it to an area that you do love, that you do have passion around, and figure out how those skills or that mindset can even be transferable to create a plan to have that stability. Is that pretty much
it? Okay. It's I think when you hear worry, you think of the word stress, and people stress about things in their financial life. But oddly enough, when you dig into it, they're never actually stressed about what they think they're stressed about. There's always some underlying issue. When you solve it, that stress goes away.
Yeah.
But it's never what people think. And then the other idea is once you've made the decision that you're going to really care and do what it takes to put a plan together, then it's decided. Think about it this way. We all have a vegetarian friend who doesn't dig on the swine.
Yes, right? Absolutely.
They don't put the pork on the fork.
I don't know if I'd call that person my friend, but right. I know them.
Right. So every time they go out to eat, they're not redeciding, you know, giving the Heisman to Bacon, right? They've already made that decision.
Yeah.
So they don't have to recommit. A big part of financial health is, this is a greeting card, turning your sacrifices into self-control. So every time you make a decision that's hard financially, but it's the right decision, it still sucks.
Yeah.
And the next time you do it, it still sucks. And the next time you do it, it still sucks. At some point in time, usually about 6 weeks, it turns into self-control. It turns into, well, this is just what I do.
Yeah.
You know, when you try to change your eating habits and you get a grilled chicken Caesar salad, it's stupid and it sucks. And I text my wife. I'm like, hey, hashtag skinny Pete. And it sucks. But at some point in time, it's like, this is what I do.
Yeah.
And that financially, that's what takes away worry, is that if what you do is worry, then you have to turn that into what you do is you make decisions, you know, in conjunction with your goals.
Gotcha.
Some
okay.
High level stuff. I mean, you should charge for this.
I'm sold.
You can keep it on it.
I'm sold. I want to. So what do I do if I'm a guy and.
You are a guy.
Well, Pete.
Well, whatever, you know, look, hey man, I'm in, whatever.
No, I'm a guy and my organization doesn't offer your money line.
Yeah.
How do I still get this help? How do I still get this assistance?
That feels like an infomercial now. Hi, I'm Tony Little. My daughter's 10 and she shares some of my comic sensibilities. And
yeah.
She loves the, what's the tape thing? Flex Seal.
Yeah.
What's the guy's name? She knows his name. Phil.
That guy's amazing.
Yeah.
I can't
so
think of his
name,
but he's
amazing.
She
talks about him all the time. And like, anyway, no one cares. So, you know, we've been doing this for a very long time. We help people through organizations. And we're launching in February, oddly enough, a service called Hey Money that does what we do with your money line. It just gives people access to a relationship with a financial expert who's just there to get ish out of their way.
Okay.
Right? To call up and have the conversation you might have, but on a very personal level.
Yeah.
And you get unlimited access to this person via text, email, or phone.
Oh, you can text as well.
Yeah. Okay. So we have an app. So the app will, it's called Hey Money. What the app will do is you just go into the app and then you can connect and just text away with your person, or you can call them off of that, or you can shoot them an email, and they're your accountability partner. Whether you are single or you're a couple that needs accountability. And so our goal was to build this for a very long time, but it's hard to do because you want experts. So you want top-end experts.
Right.
But you need a price point that helps the average person.
Right.
So it's about $200 a year.
Okay.
Right?
Wow.
And so it's sort of Netflix pricing.
Yeah.
But the goal is this. It's most people's financial... This is high-level stuff, so I'm very...
Okay.
I pre-apologize. If you're tired right now, I basically just gave you free Ambien. Think of your financial life in terms of the processes you've been through and will go through in terms of complexity and put them on a spectrum from 1 to 10. 1's okay. Like, hey, you've got your first checking account. And 10 is, which hedge fund should I invest in?
Right.
Like some really heady stuff, right?
Yeah.
Financial planning as an organization or as an industry takes experts... And it solves problems for people 8, 9, and 10.
Okay.
That's what financial planning is.
Right, yeah.
And that's what investment management is. That's what a CFP does.
Yeah.
What we're saying is, in order for a normal person to get help with 1 through 7, they either have to pay the rate of someone who's got problems 8, 9, and 10.
Yeah.
Or they have to work with someone who just wants to sell them other stuff because they can't get compensated to help them 1 through 7. And so what all we're doing with Hey Money is we're solving for the compensation problem within the financial services industry by showing people how to get help with 1 through 7 for about $200 a year. And so the problem we were solving is compensation. It has nothing to do with consumers, which sounds terrible, but that's how we built it.
Okay, so this is your first direct-to-consumer service or business where people can actually call and have access to that information or access to that help without being a part of an organization who offers it.
Absolutely. And so, you know, we talk about it. It's your financial friend, right? It's the, you know, the person like, hey, can we grab coffee?
Yeah.
It's that person in your life that can help you through things. Because often what people do, if they don't know what to do, they just Google it.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, when you read an article about a process and you don't have the same setup or scenario as that person, inevitably you're going to make a mistake.
Right. And you can't ask them questions and get answers in a timely manner.
And the worst part about this is you took the step. You had the courage to Google it.
Right.
And in return, it goes wrong.
Absolutely.
And that sucks. That really sucks. And look, I've done it. Like every home improvement project I ever attempt involves a YouTube video.
Absolutely.
I get 3 minutes in. I realize I don't have any of the tools.
Yep.
I'm not strong or smart. And then it goes off the rails. And so it's frustrating. So this is the idea of adding that layer of expertise and accountability to people.
So what's an example of, what I could call Hey Money and ask? Could I call and ask, like, hey, I'm getting my tax return next month and I don't know what to do with that?
Sure. I mean, or you can say, look, man, we got a little kid. We got two jobs. We got to save for retirement. We got to save for college. We want to buy a house eventually. And we got a ton of miles on our car and it keeps breaking down. Like, figuring out what the real priority is. Because this sounds condescending, but you might think you know what the priority is.
Right, yeah.
But choosing the wrong one out of order messes everything up.
Gotcha.
Right? So it's this idea of, don't answer out loud, but there's something going on in your financial life right now, and everybody.
Yes.
That if you resolve that issue, you can move on and deal with something else.
Yeah.
Okay? Hey Money is built to help people determine what that is, solve it, allow them to move on until they get another thing that's like, how do we solve this?
Yeah.
It is problem solving at its essence. Some people hated story problems in school. I loved them. Our entire organization.
I did too, actually. Yeah. That's weird. Yeah.
I loved them. You know what? It's not surprising though.
Yeah.
Anyone can get on stage where it's the whole concept of emceeing a gig, it's a problem.
It is.
You are
you got to figure it out.
You are the MC of a problem.
Yeah.
And that's why I love it, because it's not that. It's literally problem solving for me.
Yeah.
Okay, so now let's not get weird here. However, let's say that you've seen me MC an event.
Yes.
And the event itself, theoretically, hypothetically, is horrendously boring.
Yes.
The content.
Yes.
That's a problem.
That's a problem.
When you have hundreds of people in a room in a different country.
Yes.
That's a problem. And so the way I look at that is like, all right, how can I solve this inherent problem? The problem is it sucks.
Yeah.
How can I make it suck less?
Yeah.
And that's how I view everything. How can I make this suck less? That's how I view parenting.
Yeah.
That's how I view marriage. It's how I literally view everything.
Yeah.
Which is not always healthy, but I think a lot of times, if you're present, like we talked about, man, if you want to get better, then it's really about just being able to see the issue and then putting yourself into it.
Gotcha. So how do we get more information on Hey Money? I know it launches in February, but until then or even after then, people watch this, how could they get more information?
Well, not knowing when this hits the interwebs. Best place to go is petetheplanner.com/heymoney.
Okay.
petetheplanner.com/heymoney. Callheymoney.com will be up soon. The reality is heymoney.com was like 60 gur. And I was like, look, man, you know, for $11.99, we're going to change the
Somebody's just parking on that domain.
Someone's squatting that. Oh, you want a half funny story for you? Not that you want one, nor do you think this is funny. At one point in time, we had a financial brand called greencandy.com. Green candy.
I remember this.
Yes. Yeah. A euphemism for money, green candy.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out, I'm not hip. Green candy is often used as a euphemism for marijuana.
Absolutely.
Well, I don't know. You said that fast. And so, like, that's not my thing. Whatever. I don't care. So now, at this point in time, we will never relaunch Green Candy, despite the fact that we own it. I'm just waiting for a weed dealer to buy Hey Money or greencandy.com from me. So
that's going to be amazing.
If y'all are in distribution.
And are you asking for referrals right now?
Yeah, man. Always be closing.
Just contact Pete.
I don't know anything about that green. However, I will sell you the domain.
Can you imagine what that email would be like?
Oh, no.
Depending on what state and jurisdiction you are, there's laws involved.
Yeah, please see your local authority.
Couple questions for you before we get out of here. Please. I have some questions that were sent in to me.
Oh, my gosh. I know people.
Fancy. How do you balance preparing for the future and living in the now?
Well, man, that is the essential financial planning question. Whoever sent that to you, you should send them, I don't know, a car. It's hard. It's really hard. And so, you know, when I say, you know, things like we fund our obligations all the way and then spend the rest, like, you know, kind of a rich guy problem. So when I hear that question, it's a very real question that we get all the time. And it's deciding after you map out how this plays out, what you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
Like, Tony, if you're partially funding something, and I say to you, all right, I mean, here's what it means. It means you're working until you're 76 years old, right? Mm-hmm. It means that if you get fired along the way, you're going to have to move in with a relative. Like, you have to start to say, are you comfortable with that? What people do is when they underfund something, they don't take the time, why would they, to take it down the road to see how that would play out.
Yeah.
And so then you go backwards and you may say, well, I'm not willing to do that, but maybe I will retire at 71. And so therefore I will leave my funding level here. I just think people refuse to look at reality. There's a financial crisis going on in our country in terms of retirement.
Yeah.
And the average person, literally the average person, is unprepared.
Yeah.
And the reason one of the reasons they are is because they never took the time to actually play their math out and see what it means.
Right.
The second you do that, it's like when you go to your doctor and your doctor's like, look, man, your blood pressure is crazy. You need to quit eating onion rings or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's that wake up call. And so sometimes people wait for it, like I said, to be so bad that they're forced to change. Yet if they actually ran their calculations, they would see it's that bad and they would change.
Yeah.
And so it's letting yourself off the hook. It's extending yourself a little too much grace without enough reality. That's where people get in trouble.
And not being afraid to face the truth, whatever that may be. You know, facing it is how you start to fix it.
It's true. By the way, let's just be honest. That's easier said than done.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Yeah. I think being able to do what I do for a living and, you know, I have to be realistic. I have to say, look, man, what I'm saying works for a lot of people only if they make above living wage.
Yeah.
Because everything we've just talked about, other than some more life advice stuff, if you make below living wage, the problem is you don't make enough money.
Right.
It has nothing to do with your decision.
Yeah.
Right? And so often what people do is they'll make below living wage, so they'll get the second job. The second job will take them above living wage, but it also allows them to spend money on things that make them feel better as opposed to spending money on things that will create stability. Then they leave that second job and they're screwed.
Yeah.
I mean, it could go on for hours, but it's ugly. All right, other questions.
Yes. Another question. I don't even know if it's even possible to answer this, but maybe there's a resource that you can help us out with. How much will someone retiring in their 30s or 20s need to retire on average?
How much money will they need?
How much money do they need to retire?
I can answer it in a weird way.
Okay.
Okay. So basically, take the amount of money that you want to retire on. So let's say you're comfortable on 40 grand a year.
Okay.
Okay. And that's what you want. You want 40 grand a year. Multiply whatever you're comfortable with by 25.
Okay.
And that will get you in the ballpark of how much you need.
Okay.
So let's say that I want $100,000 a year.
Yes.
I will need $2.5 million to retire and to live at about that $100,000 a year level.
Okay.
Okay. Now, it's not perfect. It's a little rough here and there. So don't like chase me down 30 years from now and punch me in my gut.
No, that was great. I didn't think you'd be able to answer that question at all.
I just made it up. No, it's true. That, you know, but it is a, we don't like rules of thumb around here because they're just a little sloppy.
Yeah.
But that's a decent one.
Okay. Two more questions. One is, how do I know that I'm picking the right financial planner?
Well, I think a lot of people don't need a financial planner because if they have problems 1 through 7, as we talked about, they need someone who just provides some accountability.
Okay.
Other than that, your financial advisor is meant to hold you accountable. If you only see your financial advisor once a year, he tells you or she tells you to do something and you don't do it, and then you go back the next year, they're like, well, I didn't do it, and they go, ha. They're just taking your money, and it's your fault, right? So they have to make you better. I don't get too caught up in like this person gives better investment advice than that person. The person has to make you better. Think of them as your personal trainer.
Okay.
If you're not getting fit, then you don't need them. You know, if you can do push-ups yourself without someone screaming at you and charging you $35 a half hour, then don't have a personal trainer. But if you need to get better and you're not getting better and the person's not making you better, switch it up.
Super simple. God, that was great. Answer. That was a really good answer. Even know if I want to ask you another question.
No, I'm on fire. Like, really good.
Anything that you want the people to know about you, about what you're doing, about your organization, about how they can be involved? Any of the books that you wrote? Yeah. You got several books.
No one cares about that. I don't want to pitch stuff. I'll say this.
Okay.
And I steal it from a guy who I work with. Smart guy. I'll introduce you to him when we're done.
Okay.
You know, here's this theory, and I'm all in on it. It's don't shame beginnings, right? If you are wanting to make a change here and you are not doing it, you're paralyzed because you feel so much shame around how bad it is. Yeah. Or you don't seek the help you need because you think someone's going to judge you for how bad it is. This extends beyond money.
Yeah.
Drinking too much.
Yeah.
Right? This goes to drug problems. This goes to mental health issues. Like, don't shame beginnings. You have to turn it around somehow. And so if you get your idea around this concept of shame, it brings it into perspective. It's like, man, I deserve a better reality than what I'm experiencing now, no matter what you're dealing with. But what stops people from getting help is shame. So those are my parting words. It's just like, look, I got stuff going on in my life that I do not feel good about.
Yeah.
But it will never change if I feel shame around that, right? And so shame is allowing that release valve to blow out so that you can go and get the problem. Because otherwise, it just builds and builds and builds and builds, and the shame gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And then it's harder to solve the problem. So we do not shame beginnings.
I love that.
Well, see, I stole the hell out of
it. You gave him credit, which is good.
I didn't say his name.
Thanks so much for doing this, man.
Of course, man.
I really appreciate it. Great information. Check out Pete on Twitter. He's one of my favorite Twitter followers, at Pete the Planner.
That's the one.
Definitely check him out there. And this has been another episode of In My Own Words. I will see you guys next time. Peace. Great, man.
What's the R stand for? Robert?
Ray.
Ray.
I have a country music name.